This is Death Watch, the monthly podcast where we eulogize one of the greats who has recently passed by watching some of their work that we weren't previously familiar with. My name is Matt Brown.
Oh, I'm Matthew Price.
Hi, Matthew.
Hey, Matthew.
Today we are covering our first political figure, the 41st president of the United States, George Herbert Walker Bush, who died a couple weeks ago of being really old. To better explain how we're going to cover Mr. Bush, though, because it is slightly outside the format of the show, we're going to switch up the order slightly, and if you don't mind, I'm going to proceed straight into bio, and then we'll do roll call afterwards. Is that all right?
Yeah, that's fine. Okay. That'll work.
Okay.
We're not going to... Oh, shit, I watched all his movies. Are we not going to...
You're going to do it. Fantastic. Don't worry. No, you'll get a chance to talk about all of his films.
Please.
George H.W. Bush was born on June 12, 1924. After that, he presumably grew up. He postponed his university studies the day after Pearl Harbor was attacked by the Japanese, and he enlisted in the Navy as soon as he could on his 18th birthday, which was the following summer. He was an American ambassador. He was the director of the Central Intelligence Agency. He was vice president to President Ronald Reagan, and then he became the president himself from 1989 to 1993, when he lost his second term bid to Bill Clinton. Bush also spawned another president, George No H.W. Bush, who ruled the country illegally from 2001 to 2005 and was then legally elected to a second term from 2005 to 2009. It amuses me to no end that the country supposedly founded on the desire to get away from the taxation of their founding monarchy has replaced their own democracy with an ersatz monarchy of powerful families and their wealthy friends and enjoys one of the highest personal income tax rates in the entire world. On March 29, 1990, Bush gave his first speech on the AIDS crisis. This was 14 months after he had taken office. During those 14 months, 19,535 Americans had died of AIDS at a rate of approximately one every 12 minutes. The tally represented roughly a quarter of the AIDS-related deaths in the United States since Reagan took office in 1981. When questioned on why his administration did not do more to fight AIDS, Bush replied, "It's one of the few diseases where behavior matters. And I once called on somebody, well, change your behavior. If the behavior you're using is prone to cause AIDS, change the behavior. Next thing I know, one of these ACT-UP groups is saying Bush ought to change his behavior. You can't talk about it rationally." Here's Stephen W. Thrasher responding last week. As director of the CIA, vice president, and then president, Bush exacerbated the material conditions that allow AIDS to flourish in the first place. For what causes AIDS, and why has it always so disparately affected black people? Medical research and pharmaceutical interventions are important in dealing with the consequences of seroconversion and limiting onward transmission of HIV, but AIDS is caused by broader social problems. Homelessness, inadequate access to health care, political instability, racism, homophobia, and the violence of capitalism. And on these fronts, Bush is guilty. His behavior matters. Bush died on November 30th of this year, ironically, the night before World AIDS Day on December 1st. The AIDS Coalition to Unleash Power, ACT UP, coined the chant, "History will recall George Bush did nothing at all." We are here to memorialize that action by looking at some of the films come protest art that grew out of the urgency of the AIDS crisis in North America in the late 1980s and 1990s.
All right.
Does that about sum it up?
It does.
This was your idea.
We're here, and I love, yeah. I love that. Can I just say
that
just in case you think we are taking this guy out of context, I have a few of my own facts.
Please.
About former President
Bush. Lay them on.
Some good, some not so good.
Uh-huh.
So you did mention that he quit school at the age of 18, was one of the youngest people ever to enlist in World War II. He was actually shot down during a bombing run in 1944. Several of his compatriots who were also shot down were eventually eaten by the Chinese.
My God.
Yes. Google it. They ate their livers.
Yeah.
He sadly, that did not happen.
It was not him. Yeah.
He did have one of the longest, he had the longest presidential marriage in history. Six kids, one deceased at age four, the others all living.
Mm-hmm.
As we all know, he went back to school after World War II, went to Yale, joined Skull and Bones. Which I think, as most people are aware, is an active branch of the Illuminati and has always been in control of the CIA.
Did not know that.
Yeah.
He was
a member of Skull and Bones. He's a member of Skull and Bones, yes. Named by Nixon to run the RNC during Watergate.
Cool.
So he initially defended Nixon, but basically turned tail as soon as it became clear that Nixon was guilty, and then he started to focus more on defending the party. As chairman, he is the person who formally requested that Nixon resign.
Oh, cool.
So he's not only a snake, but also a rat. he did head the CIA, as probably was foredestined when he joined Skull and Bones. He headed them for basically all of calendar year 1976, a little bit into 1977. In addition to running all of the other illegal operations that the CIA was running at the time, he is solely responsible for Operation Condor, which was an effort to undermine Latin American left-wing insurgency by propping up right-wing dictatorships. It's directly responsible for the murder of at least 60,000 people.
Yep.
He also failed to predict the fall of Iran, which led to millions more dead. And most people may or may not know this. Henry Kissinger, the year before he took power, started an illegal war in Angola, which was under Bush's watch defunded by the Congress. So the CIA continued to run it in secret, killing about 300,000 more people.
Yep.
Angola was of no strategic importance, and they backed a brutal leader there. 300,000 Angolans were killed. Then he ran against Reagan in the primaries originally before he became vice president. He is the person who correctly coined the phrase voodoo economics to describe trickle down.
I did not realize that. I should have known that because it's referenced in Ferris Bueller's Day Off. I didn't know that was a Bush.
That was a Bush.
Wow.
But then, of course, as soon as it was clear he was going to lose, again, Rat gets right in line, joins Reagan, and becomes his vice president, where he supports trickle down. By any measure, Reaganomics is a tool of mass murder. Millions and millions of people put out in the street with inadequate health care and no job prospects while rich people continue to get richer. It combined nicely with total inaction on health care. Oh, and also a complete abandonment of all institutional support for the mentally ill, who were then turned out into the homeless community, which did contribute to, among other things, a massive explosion in AIDS and also a massive explosion in drug use, specifically crack. By the way, Bush was the one responsible for running the war on drugs. So not only did he help with all that, but he also oversaw a massive expansion of mass incarceration and an explosion of private prisons.
Beautiful.
A hell of a guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's George H.W. Bush. Again, this was your idea. I think it's a great idea.
It was real fun to do the research.
Yep, I'll bet. No, I mean, I've been reading all weekend.
Yeah. So
we decided to vote on, to focus on the AIDS crisis. Yeah, but I mean, you could go in a number of different directions.
You certainly could. You know, it felt like it was a good way to get into what have been some exceptionally cogent pieces of work about AIDS, because it's this, it doesn't just affect a specific population, but it's this population is so entrenched in culture and the creation of it that it felt right to to focus on
and it. And means a lot to me personally. I was you know, I was a teenager when the AIDS crisis became a matter of public interest, which I put around, you know, between like 1989 and 96, you know, in that area, people, it became a mainstream issue in a way that it had certainly not been in the 80s. And I was an advocate, with, treatment action groups. I was a fundraiser. I was a volunteer. It was kind of my major, cause and interest when I was in high school. And, so yeah, it's been fun to, well, fun. It's been interesting to revisit this time in my life and look at some of the films that were made. So normally in the show, what we do is we watch movies made by the person who died. This time, not so much. But I watched Greg Araki's The Living End.
Oh, brilliant.
What did you watch?
Brilliant. I'm very proud of you.
No, thank you. Yeah, I mean,
great
choice. Quite a bit to say, too.
I wound up watching two films because I felt like after I'd watched the first one, I hadn't quite gotten all of it. So I watched John Grayson's film Zero Patience.
Yeah, I was trying to do that, too. I didn't get the chance.
Which is the camp reaction to AIDS, and which, you know, very important aspect of gay culture, and that it's a musical about the purported patient zero. And then I watched The Normal Heart, the semi-recent HBO movie based on Larry Kramer's play about the beginnings of the crisis and the activism, and kind of a more straightforward look at everything that had sort of conspired to make this a plague and a disaster, which I felt like got to the anger part of it pretty pretty effectively.
Yeah.
So that was, I had a little double bill there, but I feel like between the two, I got, you know,
fantastic,
quite a bit.
Before we go into that, though, we should
yes.
now finally circle back and do a segment that we call Roll Call.
Roll Call.
Roll Call.
So some other notable deaths. First on Roll Call, Dr. Olivia J. Hooker died at 103, last known survivor of the Tulsa race riots when a mob of white citizens attacked residents and businesses in the African-American community of Greenwood in Tulsa, Oklahoma. This is considered one of the worst incidents of racial violence in the history of the United States. Basically, thousands of black people were killed when guys showed up with baseball bats.
Mm-hmm.
Nicholas Roeg,
yeah,
the director of... among, you know, could we go into like his filmography, Don't Look Now and The
yeah.
Witches and
Walkabout.
Walkabout and, yeah. and Performance, and like an incredibly versatile,
yeah.
really interesting filmmaker. My first exposure to anyone that I would call weird in the area of film direction,
mm-hmm.
You know, early in my film going, I saw a movie called Track 29 with Gary Oldman, which is a bizarre, odd movie that Nicholas Roeg directed. Someone we almost did this show about, Ricky Jay.
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
Yeah.
Which I didn't know how exactly we were going to do that. It just sort of amused me to try,
like,
to stretch the format and do
cow.
A magician.
Yeah, but man, Ricky Jay, like yeah. just a, I'd say beyond just being a magician, you know, a magic historian and a brilliant raconteur. And
yeah,
a
smart guy. Would have been fun. You know, and he advised on all these interesting
incredible
movies.
Incredible influence on any yeah. movie that had sophisticated crime in it.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
yeah. Huge influence on David Mamet's film career.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. Someone we would never have done a show about, Bernardo Bertolucci.
That's right. yep.
For many reasons.
Mm-hmm.
Samuel Hadida, who was a film producer, produced True Romance, Resident Evil, Crying Freeman, Freeway,
mm-hmm.
and Brotherhood of the Wolf. All those last three, all huge Midnight Madness films for Toronto audiences.
Yeah, yeah.
Stephen Hillenburg, 57 years old, died from Lou Gehrig's disease, was the creator of SpongeBob SquarePants.
Right.
57.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Gloria Katz, who along with her partner and husband, William Hyuk, co-wrote American Graffiti, Temple of Doom, and
mm-hmm.
Howard the Duck, and was, again, in partnership with her husband, a massive, massive influence on everything we love.
Yeah.
Indiana Jones, Star Wars. There was no, and they took a pass at the Star Wars script that is considered to be indispensable.
Yeah, there's a lot of amusing wordplay in Star Wars that is theirs, like the thing where,
yeah.
where, 3PO calls Luke Sir Luke, and he says, no, it's just Luke, you know, and it kind of, which is funny, but it also alludes to the fact that he is actually going to become a knight, you know, like
yeah,
it, there's
yeah.
all of those sort of double meaning.
If there's a bright
lines,
shining center to the universe.
Yeah, you're on the
that's,
planet that's
yeah,
from,
planet
this
from it.
Yep.
That's their
that's
line.
That's their
I
line
mean,
too, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they contributed immeasurably to what we consider the Star Wars style, and yet they're rarely ever discussed.
Never, yeah, yeah. Kuma, a Disney Channel dog performer and star of Dog with a Blog. I love that that was a thing.
Yep.
Activist and World War II veteran Harry Leslie Smith, who, if you have not heard of him, seek him out. He died at 95. He was probably one of the most progressive voices for change in the UK and the world. And at the age of 95 was still arguing vehemently for an expanded role for the state in people's lives and creating a more secure social safety net, and was just an absolutely inspirational person. Jeff Murphy, Australian director of Free Jack, The Quiet Earth, was second unit on Fellowship of the Rings.
Yep.
The Quiet Earth is incredible. Incredible, if you've never seen it,
mm-hmm.
about a man waking up when everyone is gone. And the first hour of it has, there's no talking. He just wanders around
yep.
in this empty landscape. It's amazing. Character actor Philip Bosco, who one of those mm-hmm. guys,
one of those
Philip
guys.
Bosco. Again, Google him, check his picture. You'll go, oh, that guy. Yes. Pete Shelley, lead singer of the Buzzcocks.
I love the Buzzcocks.
Yeah. Oh, everybody.
Yeah.
Melvin Dumar, who famously or not, in 1973, claimed that he got into a truck with Howard Hughes and that Hughes left him his fortune. And this was memorialized in the first film by, what's his name? Jonathan Demme, Melvin and Howard, which is a really wonderful, really wonderful film. Sandra Locke. Actress, former partner of Clint Eastwood, who was famously blackballed by Eastwood and was not allowed to work for many years.
Clint.
He's such a... Anyway.
He's something.
You know who else?
We're going to get to do him sometime,
Oh, well, that'll be... Yeah. You know who else died?
That
super ripped kangaroo.
Yeah.
You know that super ripped kangaroo from the really kangaroo. Muscly kangaroo? Yeah. Anyway, he died. Colin Kroll. The founder of HQ, the quiz online quiz game, co-founder of Vine, died of a drug overdose, sadly. Galt McDermott, who was the composer for the musical Hair. Penny Marshall.
Yep.
Just recently. Donald Moffat, another one of those guys,
mm-hmm.
tied to the couch in The Thing, was in Logan's Run, starred in Amistad Maupin's Tales of the City. And in my absolute favorite role by him was played LBJ in The Right Stuff.
Right.
Which is, he's brilliant.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Well, those scenes are all so fucking good.
They're so funny. When he's in the car just flipping out because she won't see him and he's, I am, tell her that I am the vice president.
Yeah.
He's, couldn't be better. Peter Masterson. So a couple of months ago, and I don't know if you remember this, but the composer of the music for Best of the Whorehouse in Texas died, and I mentioned her. Peter Masterson was the creator of the show, Best of the Whorehouse. He also directed Trip to Bountiful,
mm-hmm.
also the father of Mary Stuart Masterson.
Right.
So anyway, he
died just
away.
Like two days ago.
Yeah. And then I think yesterday, Audrey Geisel, who was the widow of Ted Geisel, Dr. Seuss.
Hmm.
And so that's... Roll call.
That's roll call.
Now, before we go on,
mm-hmm.
I have an honor roll call.
Okay.
J. Scott, Tommy Sexton, Tim Sims, John Hargreaves, Jacques Demy, Rudolf Nureyev, Ofra Chaza, Derek Jarman, Freddie Mercury, Peter Allen, Emile Ardolino, Alexis Arquette, Rick Aviles, William Dickey, Eazy-E, Brad Davis, Waylon Flowers, Kevin Peter Hall, Halston, John Holmes, Rock Hudson, Liberace, Anthony Perkins, Dak Rambo, Robert Reed, Tony Richardson, Randy Schultz, Robert Mapplethorpe, Tommy Morrison, Alvin Ailey, Nestor Alamendros, Arthur Ashe, Howard Ashman, Isaac Asimov, Harold Brodkey, Perry Ellis, Leonard Fry, Paul Giovanni, Keith Haring, Richard Hunt, Larry Kurt, Arnold LaBelle, Klaus Nomi, Norman Rene, Steve Rubell, Ray Sharkey, Gia Carangi, and Ron Woodruff. And how many more that weren't lucky enough to get famous before they got killed?
Yep. All right. Let's get into the movies.
Sure.
Why don't I go first?
Sure.
And then we can get to yours. So I watched The Living End. It was Greg Arad, not his first feature, but his first breakout feature. In addition to just being fun, and again, I've used that word to go back to this era, it was actually fun to go back to 1992.
Oh, yeah.
the year when everything happened. And all of these kids that had grown up on video store movies, suddenly started making films of their own. And you can see it from like moment one of this, you know, there's Godard posters on one of the characters' walls. There's a Sex Lies and Video videotape t-shirt. Like, I mean, it's very obviously part of that wave, and yet it's part of a splinter faction of the indie wave, which is that it's just not part of the, well, it tries to be, but it's not really part of the easily commercializable indie wave that, you know, Tarantino and Rodriguez and all them, you know, they could go off in one direction.
Araki can't help himself.
Yeah, no, he definitely can't. So even though it is a Killers on the Lamb movie,
right,
it basically has been described as the gay Thelma and Louise because it is about two guys who go on the run together after one of them has killed a surprisingly large number of people. They both have AIDS and you know, mayhem, small scale mayhem because it is an extremely low budget movie ensues. But it is such a piece of transgressive cinema, and it is so deeply bound up with its themes around the AIDS crisis and around homosexuality and queerness in America, that there was no version of this where he was going to go on and make, you know, commercially viable movies for Harvey Weinstein. Like, that just, it's not the kind of films that he made. Anywho, that's not to say that there isn't murder and gay bashing and violent lesbians and all the kinds of things that make this era of movies fun. Like, every scene is sort of a, what the fuck are we going to get this time moment? Yeah. You know, like, you start every scene not really knowing what's going to come. But it is definitely, throughout the entire movie, there is this sense of rage at the establishment that has hit these two men. And I'll get into kind of how they react to it in a bit, but this is interesting. I didn't know this going in, but the Bush references get more and more explicit as the movie goes on, early in the film, one of the characters actually says, "Read my lips." In that case, it's "Read my lips, get the fuck out of my house." And later on, one of the characters asks, "Why don't we just go to Washington and blow Bush's brains out, or better yet, hold him at gunpoint and inject him with a syringe full of our blood? How much do you want to bet they'd have a magic cure by tomorrow?" Mm-hmm. So, which I think makes this the first Death Watch movie that we've done where the honoree was threatened on screen in one of the features that we watched.
And not his, not their character, but them.
No, No. Actually, yeah. George H.W. Bush threatened verbally by one of the characters in the movie. So what's interesting, I think, about the movie is that the two characters essentially, on a very broad level, kind of have an existential crisis about how to deal with this. And one of them is, you know, the essentialist. Like, he's just living for the exact moment that he's in. He wants to have as much sex as he can. He wants to kill people who piss him off. He does all these things. The other one, less so, is sort of like doesn't believe that he has a future, because at this point it is genuinely believed that having AIDS is a death sentence, even though there is a doctor at the beginning who says out loud, "This is not a death sentence." But, like, you know, in 92, you thought you were dead, and you probably were.
Still today, if you
go to full blown,
we talk about AIDS and HIV interchangeably, but people contract HIV.
Yes,
if you get AIDS, you die.
Yeah, absolutely. So these characters are living with a clock, and yet the more introspective one is you know, he's keeping a journal. He's thinking about sort of, what does this transgression of the various rules of society mean? Not that he's thinking, "I'm going to live for a really long time," but, like, he's grappling with kind of the moral weight of it, which I think is one of the things that kind of occurred to me as it went on is that it almost becomes like a vampire film. I mean, obviously there's the thought about blood, which is, you know, central to any movie about AIDS, but, like, the one character, the nihilist, is very clearly leading the other one kind of down a dark path of destruction, and the other one is trying to decide how far down it he wants to go. There's a point where he's literally licking blood off the other character's face. Mm. And it's like, yeah, this is kind of has that vibe to it. The movie's not great. I mean, I won't say it's like a masterpiece. Like, it is extremely roughly made, and arguably, even though it is short, could be cut even more. There are some, like, subplots and cuts to other characters that I'm just like, this isn't really your movie. This doesn't need to be here. But it just reverberates with such a powerful anger and such a clear voice that it really, really stuck with me. And then it has this one, I mean, this, I guess, qualifies as a spoiler. So if you want to watch this movie, don't listen to this next part. But there's this one indelible image right at the end of the two faces in profile on a beach as the one is fucking the other, and he's got a gun in his mouth planning to blow his own brains out as he's coming
during climax.
Yeah. And I'm just like, the rest of the movie is not visual on that level at all. And then he lands this one kind of perfect poetic beat.
Yeah.
And it just brings the entire thing together.
The thing about Iraqi that I love is that generally those perfect moments happen in many of his films, and they almost always happen in ways that are the most sort of extreme for a straight audience that's not ready for them.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? There, his perfection lies in his, you know, the exuberance of his gayness, right?
Yeah.
Like, there's a very great story. It was a story I've told quite a few times about going to see the movie The Doom Generation, which was the follow-up to this, which has, if you can name a thing, it's in this movie. I mean, there's heads come off and, like, There's a scene where a guy's head gets cut off while he's eating nachos, and the mouth is still chewing the nachos while the head flies across. Like a character goes, "He was still chewing, man." Like it was just, it's got everything in it,
yeah.
Everything. And at the end, the two male characters simultaneously have sex with the female character, and that was the moment at which, and this was like an hour and 20 minutes into the movie, two people in front of me got up and stormed out.
Nice.
Like, we'll put up with a lot, but yeah. Not this.
Yeah, yeah.
And they walked out.
Yep.
So, yeah, I think, and that is also, you know, that scene is climactic in many ways and actually, like, is the best scene, I think, in the movie.
Oh, yeah.
It's played with strobe light and is, like, insanely beautifully photographed. Nice. And, you know, and is a double team. Mm-hmm. So
good stuff.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
So yeah, I think it's funny because I watched two movies because neither one had like both parts. But this sounds to me like it has both parts. It's both campy and angry.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And then it actually ends with, this is the last credit that comes up on screen after the end credits, dedicated to Craig Lee, 1954 to 1991, and the hundreds of thousands who have died, and the hundreds of thousands more who will die because of a big White House full of Republican fuckheads.
Yeah.
When was the last time you saw a film with that in the end credits?
Yeah.
I wish they put it at the end of Infinity War. Because we all would have been sitting there waiting for the stinger, right? And then this thing comes up.
Yeah, that would have been good. So let's talk about the more straightforward of the two films that I watched first, which is The Normal Heart. So it is a pretty standard, I would say, format of a movie about a cause. Has a main character played by Mark Ruffalo. Who sort of he plays Ned Weeks, which I believe these are real people, but I'm not positive.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, he's the founder of this early AIDS crisis activist group, trying desperately to get any government agency to notice him, going on television and accusing the CIA of conspiracies. He's a very divisive character, and the movie is really about how whether yelling the truth as loudly as possible is always the best way to get something done, and so. You know, it examines the crisis from the point of view of a lot of characters that all the characters have friends who are dying at incredible rates. And the amount of palpable anguish and sadness and anger in the film is extraordinary. And the performances are extraordinary up and down the line. There's great, great performances from like tons of very talented actors and Jim Parsons. But it comes down to this sort of like this central question of, you know, are ends and means divided, and it's quite an interesting take on it, and it's based on a play, and it is filled with some very speechy moments.
Mm-hmm.
That are extraordinary, really gripping, really beautifully delineated from an acting perspective, and you know, well directed, does not feel static, and really, it's a great, really mm-hmm. good, really good film. And it ends with the fact that Ronald Reagan, the first time he even mentioned AIDS by name was in 1985 in a speech where he said they were going to redouble their efforts and focus on it to find a cure. And then the following year cut funding by 30% or something.
Great.
Yeah.
Maybe he thought that's what doubling was.
Maybe. Yeah. Yeah. And actually in one of the most telling sort of vignettes in the film, the main character is called to the White House, and it's like, oh, my big break.
Mm.
Finally, 1984, finally someone in the White House will listen to me. And the meeting is with someone whose title is Special Advisor to the President.
Mm-hmm.
And he proceeds to sit down and start asking him questions about the crisis. And the guy is saying, well, what is it that you do? Like, how exactly are you going to help me mm-hmm. with this? Like, what? He says, well, I write up things that the president considers to and decides whether he's going to make them part of his platform or not. That's my job. And then as this interview goes on, it rapidly becomes clear that what's really going on is that this guy has been fucking a lot of hookers, and he is afraid that he's caught AIDS. And so what he wants to know is, can I get it from straight sex with a hooker?
Mm-hmm. Answer is yes.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, it's really angry in the right ways and really good. And Ruffalo is great, and Matt Bomer plays his lover and is great, and everybody's great in it. And yeah, and then, but before that, I watched Zero Patience, which was one I sort of really, really wanted to watch. And it is really fun as a movie about the crisis can be.
Mm-hmm.
It is a musical
yep.
about this purported patient zero
mm-hmm.
And the rise of AIDS in North America. And the main character is Sir Richard Burton, the Sir Richard Burton from 1890, who purportedly has never aged because he drank from the Fountain of Youth and works at the ROM. Putting on dioramas, and the reason he's investigating AIDS is because he's doing a diorama about the history of diseases, exhibit. It's great. It's a very fun, it's as light and as fruity and as sort of silly as this concept can get and still be about something serious. But because it's basically this guy investigating gay culture, and by the way, Richard Burton, in addition to discovering the mouth of the Nile and purportedly the Fountain of Youth, was the person that translated the Kama Sutra.
Mm.
And he was, you could call him almost an early advocate for promiscuity and sexual health. Right. And so it's the songs are totally forgettable, but they are really fun while you're watching it.
Mm-hmm.
There's a bathhouse song about the etiquette in the bathhouse and what to do if you have a boner. And
I've often wondered.
Yeah, you got to show it proudly mm-hmm. and pay no attention to it.
Yep.
Yeah. So anyway.
Like the rest of my life.
Right. Yep. Yes. Yeah. So I would seek it out. I saw it on YouTube. It's free. It's just there.
Oh, okay. I was going to ask where you saw it because I couldn't.
It's just
I tried
on...
to torrent it.
No, it's
could not.
It's just on YouTube. Oh. So feel free
That's
to.
That's usually the answer when I go to the trouble of going to a torrent site is like, no, it's on
free.
YouTube.
Someone has uploaded it. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, it's not like it's a 480p, whatever. It's
whatever.
Fine. It's perfectly fine.
Yeah.
So do that. That's a good time. And
I
did enjoy it. And yeah, and I've been so thankful for this show because I actually reminded me how angry I am about all of this.
Yeah, me too. I mean, it's weird to have such a terrible time wrapped in sort of a weird level of nostalgia. Like, please go with me on this. I'm very grateful for the AIDS crisis because it did wake me up to action, to empathy for people who have issues that are not your own. It was a big part of my growing up. But yeah, obviously also when you start staring it in the face, you also are just like, I was in the UK in October and there are all these monuments to which two thirds of the town were decimated by World War One. Like which part of the gene pool just vanished because of World War One. And it's the same thing with this, like just huge swaths of the lineage of our culture were destroyed by this.
Well, like I said, when I read that list, that's the list of people that did accomplish things before they were unceremoniously removed.
Yeah.
And you think about all the things that they didn't get. Think about all the music that we didn't get from Freddie Mercury.
Of course.
Which undoubtedly would have been a lot.
Yeah.
Right? And think about, and those are the people that we know about. What about the hole that has been left in our culture because of all the people that hadn't made it yet?
Yeah.
That, there were 20 other Lin-Manuel Mirandas out there.
Yep.
Right? There were, there were 50 of those guys.
Yeah.
And they're not here anymore.
Yeah, man. What would Howard Ashman have done if he'd, made it to the end of the 90s? Like,
Don't even. Yeah.
Don't even.
Yeah.
It's insane.
Yeah. Well, the first thing he would have done is put a stop to all those fucking remakes.
Probably. And I got to tell you, the songs in The Lion King would have been a lot better.
Yeah.
I mean, nothing against you, Elton. Love you.
Yeah.
But
that
style didn't work. Anyway, that's for another show.
Do you know something about Elton John?
No.
What do you know? What do you know about Elton John?
No. All right. So I think we'll wrap it up there with that. I did create a watch list for this month. I just didn't want to post it ahead of time because I didn't want to give the game away. But I think it's got 20 or 25 films that are well worth seeing.
And we didn't talk about it. But, man, if you haven't seen Angels in America.
And you know what is horrible is I haven't.
Yeah.
And HBO played it this week.
Yeah.
And I didn't PVR it because I was like, I'll never have time to watch that. And I wouldn't have, but I should have PVR'd it and just watched it.
Definitely watch that. And
there's
a reason why one of the quote unquote most famous people to die of AIDS is not on my list, Roy Cohn. He's not getting memorialized by me.
No.
But man, what a fucking, that thing is amazing.
Well, I will track it down and watch it. And, there's plenty of other movies on that list that you should track down as well from, 1985 till, your candidate from 2014, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
So, this is, if there is a positive, this has had a huge and robust history in filmmaking as one of the key through lines of the last 20 years of cinema. So that's not nothing. I mean, it's not as good as the other thing, but it is not nothing.
Yeah.
We mentioned her briefly in Roll Call, probably so briefly that you were like, what? Do they not care about her? No. It's because we had already decided to do her for January, so our next episode will, of course, be about Penny Marshall. At this time, you are planning to watch A League of Their Own?
No, you're going to watch A League of Their
Own. No,
you said you were going to watch A League of Their Own.
You said you were going to watch A League of Their Own, and I was going to watch Jumpin' Jack Flash.
Yes, I'll watch A League of Their Own.
Whatever.
Watch Jumpin' Jack Flash. Because that's A League of Their Own is the only one that I haven't really given a fair shake to.
I've never seen it.
Yeah.
So I may watch it as well.
Please.
I am not exactly versed in Penny Marshall's directed films. But yeah.
Presumably you've seen Big.
I have seen Big. Good. I have some strange feelings about Big that maybe I'll get into on the show.
Yeah.
Not necessarily looking forward to that, but we will discuss Penny Marshall in January. You can follow us on Letterboxd at Death Watch Pod. You can follow us on Twitter, also at Death Watch Pod. You can comment on this show at modernsuperior.com, where there are many other great podcasts that you can listen to and download. You can subscribe to us in iTunes and in the Play Store. And if you have not left a review yet, please do so, because we would love to grow those numbers. Oh, and I guess I should mention, because I don't think we've done Death Watch since we did it, you probably noticed there was a weird episode of a different podcast in your feed last month. Sorry about that. Hope you enjoyed
it. We'll try not to let that happen again.
Yeah, it might happen a lot.
It might.
Yeah, it was just...
Also, for the record, I just want to say, because I know we're going to get some mail, I don't actually believe in the Illuminati.
All right.
I was just saying it because it's a thing.
I believe in the Illuminati.
All right, fair enough.
Yeah.
All right. Send your mail to Matt.
I think every organization has an Illuminati, and what is the world if not an organization? So, yeah, they're out there, man. They're doing stuff.
All right.
Yeah, why not? Thank you so much for listening, and we will talk to you again next month. Happy New Year.
This episode has been brought to you by the Modern Superior Podcast Network.